Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk. And today we have a very special author who's here to talk about a book that's perfect for Father's Day and for the baseball season. The book is called Major League Dads, and Kevin Neary is one of the co-writers with Leigh Toubin, with a foreword by Terry Francona, of all people, too. And the book is just out from Running Press. It's in all your bookstores now and has the cutest cover you'll ever see in a baseball book. Hello.
David, thank you so much. I thank you for giving me a holiday and talking about Major League Dads.
I love looking at this cover because the little kid crouching down is so adorable. I mean, who is this guy, and is that his real kid?
Well, you know, to let you know, it is not me, that cover, but it comes up so often. You know, is that you, or is that your son? And the answer is no. But you know what it is? It's probably a father and a son that you could look at and find on any little league field or little league, you know, little sandlot field, anywhere around the country. And it's that look that it's just classic. And I thank my publishers for finding that picture and creating that image. It's just classic.
You even look on the back cover like you're having fun. I mean, you look like a fun guy. You just look like somebody who enjoys life.
Well, you know, David, for the last 22 years, I've worked for the Walt Disney Company. So for me, it's kind of the nature of the beast there. You know, it's all about fun. I've been writing for them for actually 19 years. I've put out 5 books with Disney. And this is my first venture outside of the Disney realm. And I just love it. This is really my passion, which is baseball. And Major League Dads, you know, I often say that, you know, Walt Disney would have been happy with this book because it's nothing negative. There's baseball's had a lot of knocks and dings over the last 10 years with, you know, issue after issue with, you know, aspects of, you know, that aren't the best for the sport. But Major League Dads is all positive. It's a collection of 150 interviews that I've done over the last 5 years of Major League Baseball players who were at one point coached by their father in Little League and beyond. And really it's a chance for a lot of these ball players to talk about, in many cases, the most important person still in their life, which is the dad.
And they're right, and that's
kind of special.
Right, and the thing is they're very open about it because they want to talk about their dad. Who doesn't want to talk about somebody they're so proud of?
Absolutely, David. You know, that's the fun part because, you know, here I am in so many dugouts and so many clubhouses over these 5 years, and I'm talking to these players, and, you know, they really do open up. The curtain comes down. They talk about subjects, and I can't tell you the number of times that a player turned to me and said, you know, I don't think I've ever told anyone this story, you know, in reference to the, you know, it ever being in print or anywhere else. You know, and for being a writer, that's great. It's absolute gold material. But, you know, for the player's standpoint, this is a book I think they felt passionate about, you know, in terms of, you know, as I said, getting the word out about, in most cases, the most important person in their life. And for me, it's been an absolute emotional journey for these 5 years. I mean, I've had players laugh, I've had players cry, I've had players just absolutely break down and lose it, you know. I even had one player who turned to me and said, you know, Kevin, I have not talked to my father in over 20 years, but I owe him everything, and I'm hoping your book brings us together.
Wow.
You know, that alone for me is over these years has been motivation enough.
Now, is that person in the book?
Yes, he is.
He is.
You know who that is? I reference that line, but he asked me not to divulge his name, and I'm sticking to it. I won't tell him, but he knows.
Well, that's his private bit. That's his private business.
Exactly. When his father picks that book up, he'll see that, and he'll know that that's his son.
Well, you know what? You know what? Why this book's good for me? Because I did not have a good relationship with my father. I wasn't able to be very close to my father. And this is sort of a replacement for that, reading about all these kids who did have good times with their fathers. So it's kind of a, wow, this is the way it could have been for me. And while
that's kind of neat to think about, yes.
While that seems very bittersweet and very sad, it isn't. It's very uplifting because I realized my father wasn't really like that. My father loved to play ball, but he really wasn't a guy you could get close to.
Sure.
I mean, he had very, very low self-esteem, and that makes it very difficult to get close to somebody like that.
That's interesting. But it's wonderful that you can take this opportunity then to turn it into an uplifting experience, which is great. So I thank you for that.
Right. I mean, and there, if there's one theme that seems like in all these 150 stories, it's a supportive dad. And we start when and you're reading these stories, you start to realize this is why these people became successful, because their dad supported them. And what if their dad had said, "No, you're never going to play baseball, and I'm never going to help you with it"? Where would they be today?
Exactly. That seems to be the common thread that runs through the book. You know, it is dads that want to spend time with their son. You know, and the great part of it, David, is that I know. There's a lot of horror stories associated with fathers on the bleachers and the diamond and the clubhouse. You know, the screaming at the son and forcing him to play a particular game. And what's interesting about that is they're not the kids that make it. The kids that make it are the fathers that are supportive, that are there for him, that do encourage him every step of the way.
And as I'm reading the book, I'm thinking, wow, and the patience that's involved with being a Major League Baseball player. Who even thinks about that going in? I mean, unless their fathers have taught them that all those years. I mean, there is an infinite amount of patience. When you get up there and you strike out and you know you're not going to be up for nine more batters, that's got to be a frustrating feeling.
Exactly. And that's just it. I mean, I guess one of the best stories about patience and fathers and, you know, that I remember, it's coming from Evan Longoria, the all-star third baseman for the Tampa Bay Rays. And I remember him telling me a story about how, you know, he started out as a pitcher. You know, he was a pitcher a lot of times in his little league days. And he used to get so frustrated. He used to get so much to the point where, you know, he didn't do well. And he started to cry. And he says, you know, I'm 12 years old and I'm crying on the mound. And he said that his father used to come out to the mound and he says he just would look at me. And it would look at me in a certain way, almost, and then he says, I knew he didn't ever yell. He never looked at me, you know, any sternly looks. He really just looked at me and had this loving face, and he says, I knew, just looking at his face, things were going to be okay. So, you know, for me, that was the special part about, again, it's these guys were had a chance to talk about subject matters you never hear about. You know, Jorge Posada, he's a great catcher, just retired with the New York Yankees. I remember the day that I interviewed Jorge, and it happened to be the same day that he had received that morning the news of his father suffering from Parkinson's disease.
Right.
And, you know, it was pretty tragic, you know, or traumatic for Jorge and his family. But the part that really kind of upset him the most, Jorge, was the fact that, as he said, today was the day that I realized I no longer can have a catch with my father.
That's terrifying to think about. You know, that's
exactly.
But you have the memories. So, that's what makes us go on. We have those memories that are always going to be there, and nobody can ever take those away. You know, we have them, and they're there. And you know, I have those memories of my mom. I have those memories of my dad, even though I wasn't really close to him. Although he did take my other brothers down to the park and play with them all the time, so he knew how to play baseball. But, you know, I wasn't the big baseball person. I couldn't hit that well. So I was always the run of the family as far as baseball was concerned. I didn't know.
There you go. Like a pinch runner.
I was surrounded by my brothers who could hit, but I couldn't hit. Yeah, pinch runner. I was a good runner. That's one thing I was good at.
Yeah. We all need pinch runners out there.
I still have a vivid memory of my cousin playing baseball with us and running to first base and falling in a mud puddle. Just collapsing. I mean, it's weird how you have these certain memories in your head you can't get out, and we all have that, and that's what makes the book fun too. They have all these little memories.
And for me, one of the fun parts of the I remember one of the fun parts for me was the questions was, you know, what's the greatest advice you learned from your dad? And I cannot tell you the number of times a player, after I asked that question, would pull off the cap on his head and just show me the bottom of his brim of his cap. And etched, you know, and then, you know, something in pen or Sharpie, that player has written that expression, that quote, that little saying that his father has said to him, you know, 25, 30 years ago, and that has just, you know, that has stuck with him all these years. And this is, you know, they're not necessarily their way of saying thank you to their dad, but, you know, living those, still those, through those virtues, those dreams, and, you know, those core values that their father taught them all over these years.
Now, Now, you started, I know you did Disney trivia books. So how did you get from Disney trivia books to this baseball book? It's kind of
it is kind of an oddity. And, you know, but as I said before, you know, Disney has this wonderful way of, as I said, I write positive things. And, you know, and I think that lent itself so well to this book, you know, in terms of, you know, writing about fathers and sons. You know, and it's such a, there is such a connectivity. A lot of people can debate me out there, but I really do think baseball connects generations more so than any other sport. And, you know, it is something, you know, is it all-American? Is it, you know, as they say? But I think it is. It's one of those icons of America, just like Disney. You know, and I think that's why it lends it so well. And maybe allowed me the opportunity of writing this type of book.
Well, more than baseball, I mean, sports connects guys all over the world. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, you go to a bar and you see guys grouped around watching what else? A sporting event.
Exactly. But what I'm saying in terms is that when a father, you know, when a son, a lot of those memories are ingrained in a lot of kids' heads and boys and heads, you know, because they always remember that first baseball game. They often talk about, you know, that first, you know, Phillies right. game they went to with their dad, or the first New York Mets or Yankees game they went with their dad. You know, you rarely ever hear that guy say as they got up, it got older, that I still remember that first, you know, 76ers game, or, you know, New York Knicks game, or, New York Rangers game, or Islanders game. It's always about, you know, it's always about baseball.
I'm reading the Curt Schilling one. I always thought Curt Schilling was had a bit of a likability about himself, if you know what I mean. But reading that, it makes me think he's just really a nice guy underneath all that.
He really is. He's in terms of Curt, I remember you catching up with him a couple of years back when he was in a Red Sox uniform, and he was the nicest guy. And he was in a situation where he loved his, he loved talking about his father. And you also have to understand that Curt lost his father when he was 21 years old. And prior to that, his father was every part of his life, every part of the, you know, every step of the way.
Right.
And when he lost his father, it was very traumatic for him. But as a way of saying thank you and a way of saluting his father, Curt, as he went on his baseball career, laid a seat open for his father. Whether that was in Philadelphia, whether he played in Philadelphia, Arizona, Boston, any of those locations, he would always leave a seat open in memory of his father. And I remember asking him, I said, you know, why do you do it? And he says, quite simply, you know, the reason why I leave a seat open for him is because I want my own four children to still think of me the same way as I do my father. You know, that says it all.
That's nice. That's really nice.
Yeah. So, and I even said to him, I said, do you ever look at that chair for inspiration? And he says, all the time.
And all the stuff he does for charity, I mean, it's amazing.
Absolutely. It's amazing with the, he has some charities he concentrates on, and he's just a good guy. And you know, that's what Major League has is, you know, the curtain comes, as I said, the curtain comes down on a lot of these guys. It starts revealing a lot of the human side of these ballplayers.
Right.
And which is for me, an absolute joy to talk about in terms of, you know, again, baseball's had a lot of nicks and pings and dings and dongs over these last 10 years with certain issues like, you know, steroids, for instance. But this is all good, all positive.
Right. Now, you talked to more than 150, but is the general idea of the baseball player that they're doing it for the fun of it, or would you come across occasionally somebody who was doing it more for the fame or the money or something else? Not that I want you to mention any names. I don't want any names. But.
You know, it's interesting because what always comes out in every interview and every conversation I have with these guys, you know, it's all about the fun. You know, even today, and I can't tell you the number of guys that, you know, said to me in one particular, for instance, Chipper Jones. And I remember asking Chipper a couple of years ago, I said, you know, when do you think you'll call it quits? And he says, when it's not fun anymore. And, you know, and that seems to be it's not about the money for most of these guys. For most of these guys, it's about playing for the love of the game, which is, you know, which is so wonderful to see. You know, and that's what always comes out in the conversations that you have with these guys, is that it's the love of the game that my father always taught me. He instilled in me the love of the game and not necessarily the basics of how to play, but he taught me appreciation for teamwork and respect, and especially that respect for the game. And then from that, it became the love for the game.
Now, how did you get Terry Francona to do the forward? I mean, do you just ask these guys?
Well, Terry was a unique situation because Terry started out as just one of the many interviews, you know, of the 150 to be interviewed. But Terry liked the idea. He loved the idea, loved the concept of, you know, being in a situation that he could talk about his own father, who was Tito, who happened to be also a major league ball player. But Terry wanted to do a little bit more, and Terry loved the concept, and he wanted to contribute more to this book instead of just being another essay or, interview story. So as time went on, it only seemed natural to then pull him in for a larger part of the book, which was send it forward.
And what a busy
and
guy, too.
I mean, you know, and I could be happy. I mean, first of all, he has such a connection to the two of the largest city baseball markets in the country, both Philadelphia and Boston. Plus, he's a two-time World Series champion. So I couldn't think of a better person to include in this book, especially given the fact that Terry's strong connection to his father, Tito.
Now, you talk about Greg Maddux, memorizing the questions you were going to ask him and coming back and answering them all in order and exactly how you phrased them. And, like, he's got a photographic memory. I mean, that's an amazing story. I mean, how many players can do that?
You know what? And David, to be honest with you, I wish everyone could do that. Because, but what Greg basically symbolized was the fact that, you know, he was very passionate about the book as well and about the experiences of him, his father being his coach. So he knew he needed to get this right. So you can, you know, and basically how the story goes is that, you know, I ran into Greg Maddux probably his last year in a major league uniform, which was San Diego. And I asked Greg, I said, well, you know, was your father ever your coach? And he says, yes, he was. And then I said, well, the next step in the process is, you know, would you mind doing a quick interview about that experience? So he says, you know, so I love you, Kevin. He says, but here's my situation. I have to go out now and warm up. So I said, so I thought, you know, that was the end of the conversation. But he says, but I want you to tell me the questions you're going to ask. Because for the next 45 minutes, I'm going to go out there and warm up. And then I'm going to think about the questions you give me, and then I'll come back with the answers. So sure enough, I gave him a rapid fire, you know, six or seven questions at him, and then he went off the pitch and warm up. 45 minutes, almost to the minute, Greg Maddux comes back into the clubhouse, calls me over, and then starts reciting back to me both question and answer. It was the most amazing interview that I had been in this entire process. So here he is giving me the question, and then followed up immediately with the answer. And you knew he was out there since going through each of the questions in his mind and sincerely, you know, thinking about formulating that answer and knowing that he wanted to get it correct.
Another thing I was thinking about while I was reading this book is all the times that you mentioned how some of the players would call their father after the game and say, now, what did I do wrong, Dad? And the Phillies... And the Phillies, with all their problems this year, I'm thinking to myself, now, why don't the Phillies do that more so they can figure out what they're doing wrong this year? Why are they not playing well this year?
Yeah, they really need more players that are coached by their dad on that team. There are so many classic stories of, you know, the Lance Berkman, Joe Mauer, Chipper Jones. They're all players in it. And we're not talking about the slackers of the game. We're talking about some of the superstars of the game. And there's so many others that I can reference right now, but they're in, you know, like in a batting slump, when they're not doing well, the first person that they call is the dad. And when you ask him about that, you know, like, let's take, for example, Chipper. Same situation. His father is his coach. When he gets into a situation where he's not hitting well, one of the first person that his manager and his coaches tell him to call is they say, call your dad. And sure enough, he does, as in terms of... his hitting, because, you know, as Chipper said, it's no one knows his swing better.
I forgot to mention the little thing. Baseball's best players reflect on the fathers who inspired them to love the game. That's part of the title of the book, too. I should have mentioned that when I did that. But and they're so moving, some of these stories, and almost moving with tears sometimes. And I love looking at the little pictures of what the players were like as kids. I'm like, oh, my gosh, there he was as a little kid, you know. And now he's this big, huge player making tons of money, having lots of fun. And working hard, but that's what, and that's what I forget sometimes, how hard these players work. I mean, warming up before the game, being there before the game, being there after the game for interviews, even when you lose. It is a tough deal. It is not. It's not for the slacker.
Exactly, it's the full package. You know, these guys are basically, you know, involved in their sport and their trade for 9 months, and they give up all family life in those 9 months every year.
I can't imagine what it does to the wives. I can't even imagine the toll that it takes on the wives.
I really do. It has to be a certain type of a wife that marries into a ball player, because they know that they're not going to see him a lot.
Right. It's got to be tough. I mean, when they do see him, boy, it must be nice.
Yeah.
What was your dad like?
My dad was a baseball guy. You know, he loved baseball. You know, he grew up in Philadelphia, and all I ever heard about was the great Connie Mack and the Philadelphia Athletics, and really a lot of the ball players that he used to watch and you know, and listen to. You know, the Ted Williams and the Ernie Banks and Willie Mays and the Al Kalines. They're the players he followed, and that's the players he liked. And, you know, he kind of passed that love and those appreciation of those players off to me. And, you know, I kind of feel guilty myself because I'm doing the same thing for my own son. You know, where I'm telling him about the players that I used to watch, you know, the Mike Smiths, the Steve Carlsons, and those guys. So, you know, I think that's what, as I said before, baseball has this wonderful ability of connecting generations. And, you know, and as I also say, and kind of reflect in the book, you know, there's, you know, that expression, David, where, you know, history begins the year you're born.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, but when you're in a baseball kind of family, I don't think history has any barriers, you know, because when you're in that situation, you learn about players from every decade, every situation, and that's what makes baseball, again, so unique, that ability to connect them all.
And, you know, it's so heartwarming to realize that all these fathers really cared about their sons, too, and you know, in a day and age when there's so much going on and so much, I mean, fathers are working, mothers are working, the kids are sometimes left home alone or with somebody else, you know, there's so much going on. The thought of not taking care of your kids properly is horrifying to anybody.
Exactly.
And, I mean, how are these kids going to grow up? I mean, and you see these kids getting into all kinds of trouble. And, you know, it's some of the reasons it's got to be because the parents aren't there. Or they, you know, and there's just, it's so easy for that to happen. And being it, and I like that you stress that in the book about how hard it is to be a father, too. It's not.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you don't realize how hard it is until you become the son, and then you get married, and you become the father. Then you suddenly realize, oh, my gosh, no wonder my father was like that. No wonder he lost his temper at me. This is not an easy job. This is a full-time...
No, it's not for the faint of heart, as they say.
24-hour, 7-day-a-week job, you know? It's just... and you never stop being a father. Even when your kid gets to be 45 and you're 78 or 80 or whatever, you still think about your children.
You were always going to be a dad in that case.
It's just, you know, the scope of it is just so much more than... It makes you wonder if people know when before they have children and what it's going to be like if they still have kids. You know,
exactly.
I mean, how many kids do you have?
We have three.
You have three, so, and I'm sure you're a busy guy too. But, you know,
so we have them in range of anywhere from 12, 10, and 8, or so. We're on that 2-year plan. So
I love that. I don't remember now. I like the Jeff Francoeur one. That's one of my favorites. For some reason,
that's one of my favorite quotes because it really does summarize the whole book. In terms of, you know, the fact that, as Jeff said, there might be 55,000 people in the stands, but you can only hear your dad's voice. And that is really true for all these players. I can't tell you the number of players who said, my dad, you know, I can always pick him out in the stands. I can always hear him, even though the stadium is crowded. I can always hear my dad. I can always pick him out.
Right. It's just, yeah, his story, for some reason, was one of my favorites in the book. You always do that as a reader. You can't help but pick out favorite parts of a book, and I'm sure the authors don't mind, but they want everything to be perfect.
No, not at all.
But there's always going to be. There's always
good. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's. There's always one you're going to think about. It's like when an author writes a series of books, you always have a favorite. I mean, I always seem to have a favorite.
Exactly.
Unless it's a really great writer, but. So this took 5 years to put all of these together. Did you have ones where you tried to do the interview and it just didn't work out?
Oh yeah, that happens, and it's, you know, it's a situation. They might be able to just disable the list, or they may be in the trainer's office or some other room, or they may not have been traveling with the team at that particular, you know, that series or such, and then I just missed them. So I mean, there's always going to be those that I miss. But, you know, 150 is a pretty good number. You know, I often kind of say, well, you know, where do I stop? But, you know, it's nice, for me, 150 had that nice little ring to it.
No, I don't mind.
There might be a little,
right.
Yeah.
No, I don't mind who you pick. I'm not gonna tease you about who you didn't put in the book or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I may have missed some players too, but, you know, that's also the nature of the game of baseball. You're always going to have those ebbs and flows. And, you know, there's a player, for instance, like there's a great player right now with the Washington Nationals. His name's Bryce Harper.
Yeah.
Gosh, I mean, you can't say anything. I can't tell you the number of people said, "Why didn't you interview him?" But of course, he just made it to the big leagues, you know, the major leagues, just a few months ago.
Right.
So, you know, I try to keep this as pure as possible and only interview those that are major leaguers. Cool. You know, knowing full well that he was going to eventually be a major leaguer, it still didn't really fit the paradigm or the parameters of the book.
Now, I have to ask you, just because I have this fixation when I meet famous people, I'm very excited. What is it like to meet these guys that you've gotten to know just from watching them on TV or listening to them on the radio? What is that like, that first, when you're standing in front of them and you have their attention? What is that? It must be a great feeling.
Well, you know, at first it was. But as time goes on, what takes over is more of the fact that you want your story to be told, you know, and you want to get out there, and you know they have a story to tell, and, you know, you owe it to them to finish the actual interview or the process of the interview. So, you know, for me, it is still, though, fun talking to these guys.
You wonder how they, I mean, they're suddenly famous people. I mean, famous all over the media. And, you know, they go from just a little league player and then school, and then all of a sudden they're this famous ball player. And everybody, you know, all these people revere them. And you wonder what that does to a person. I mean, it's a quick change. You know, it's like now you're famous. Now you have to answer reporters' questions, and you have to keep your temper in check. Which can't be easy all the time. I mean, there's always got to be. But I wonder how they handle that. Well, they just become instant celebrities. And I wonder, really, if you got a sense of how they handle that too. Did they ever talk about that? As far as
I think a lot has to do with, you know, in terms of those, each club has a usually very good media relations departments. They kind of shield a lot of these players and help, you know, develop, you know, they protect them in these types of situations. And, you know, but the players also are always in a situation where they're very guarded when they do interviews. I, on the other hand, personally was very fortunate because they did open up. But then again, the subject matter led in so well because it was about fathers and sons.
Right. Yeah, it's a tough life for them. I mean, just watching the Phillies game today and being so frustrated that they're not hitting, and you know, you get frustrated with your team because it's your team and you want them to win. And with the Phillies, who have been winning the last three or four seasons really well, and now all of a sudden they can't seem to win, it's a shock. I mean, it's a shock to a lot of the Philadelphia fans. And that's where the fun of the game comes in. That you have to have. You have to think of it as fun. When you start thinking of it as winning and losing, which I guess every fan does, but it takes some of the fun out of it, and at least for me. I mean, I have vivid memories of my dad screaming about the Phillies losing, or oh, they blew another one. Or
that sounds like my dad, yes.
I mean, and that's such a, it's probably very, very, not a very unusual thing for your dad to be I guess,
no,
we all,
I think it's kind of a universal thing. It's ingrained in all dads.
But now, I mean, now I feel like it's ingrained with me. I'm upset when they lose too, and I'm sure. Now, is the Phillies your team now?
Well, you know what, David, there's an expression which says you can take the kid out of Philly, but you can't take the Philly out of the kid. I still like the Phillies. You know, I still follow the Phillies. And in fact, I'm going to be doing a book signing at Citizens Bank Park soon, which would be nice, kind of reconnecting there.
Oh, yeah.
With the Phillies. And then, but I've kind of picked up, you know, being in Florida for the last 17 years, I've kind of adopted the Tampa Bay Rays as our team. Or, you know, because my son, you know, grew up, he doesn't have any frame of reference as being a Philly fan. He was born and raised in Florida, and, you know, his team that he kind of gravitated to was the Rays.
Right. Now, you worked for the Phillies for 9 years, right?
Yes.
Right. So you got to see inside what it's like for a team.
Yeah, a little bit here, a little bit there. I mean, it was kind of a different ball game back then, though, you know, in those terms. So, you know, but for the last 22 years, I've been, you know, working with the Walt Disney Company. So, yeah. I mean, but things change. But also, you know, that's the other aspect of the game, that, you know, that there's so many consistencies with the game. You know, it's still 60 feet, 6 inches of that pitching mound and 90 feet to first base. So now something never will change.
Right. Now, the Molina brothers, by the way, how many Molina brothers are there? At least three.
Three.
There are three.
There's Benji, there's Jose, and then there's Yadier.
I mean, how many? Is that a... Well, I guess the, you know, Lou's had at least three, too, right? Didn't anybody ever have four or five?
No, I think three's the limit. But what's unique about the Molina brothers, it's the first time any three sons or, you know, three brothers have been in a situation of catching. So, you know, it's the same situation. It's, you know, they're very good at their particular position. And it's the first time any three catchers have done it.
Yeah, they're so good. They when the Phillies lose them, I get very angry with them. That's the thing. When you read this book, you realize these people are human beings. And we want, you're watching the game. You're so caught up in your team winning that the other team is the enemy. You know, you can't root for the other team. They're the enemy. You forget that. I mean, at least I do. This is how I feel. I forget that, you know, they're human beings. They're playing. They're having fun, too. They want to win, too. And all I can think of is I want my team to win. I don't care about the other team. So it's kind of like they feel like the enemy to me, although they shouldn't feel that way. It should be fun. I think, once again, my dad had some say in that, in making me feel that way. But you, how can you help it feel that way? I mean, when you love the team so much.
Yeah, yes.
I mean, and the feel, we all know, I mean, in 2008, I mean, when the season was over, I cried my eyes out just watching all the celebrations and realizing how hard these people worked to win this. And how surprising it was that they did win. I mean, there's nothing like that feeling when you've won everything.
Nothing beats being a champion, especially, you know, a major league, you know, when baseball players can, because you hear that, you know, that, you know, oftentimes you'll hear, you know, did you have a complete year, career? And most of the times they'll say no because, you know, they didn't win a World Series championship. I mean, it's so important to some of these ball players, but again, that's why they play the game. Somebody have said to me that they you know, they played a game to get to the World Series and win it. That's the only reason.
Right.
And, you know, that makes sense.
Now, you interviewed Roy Halladay and Jimmy Rollins. What was it like to interview those two? I'm curious because, of course, they're two of my favorites.
Yeah, love Jimmy. Jimmy was very passionate about, not necessarily all about his father, it was also about his mother. Jimmy grew up in the Oakland area, same situation. His father taught him everything about the game, always there for him, to support him, to be part of his life, and also his mother. His mother loves, Jimmy says, my mother loves to brag about her son, the Major League Baseball player. Roy Halladay, same way. He's real, you know, but a little different situation. In Roy's case, his father was a military guy. He was a commercial pilot. And he was very, you know, he had a strong military background. So he had a little bit, kind of a strict background. But again, same situation, taught him everything about the game, aspects of the game, love the game. So there are common themes, whether, you know, wherever you are, for these ballplayers.
Right. Roy Halladay's always this very quiet, he seems like this quiet, really kind of guy who you know, it's hard to get to know.
Yeah. He is always in the zone, especially when he arrives at that ballpark, he is always in the zone.
It's amazing. I mean,
ready to play.
You wonder, You wonder, you wonder what that's like for him to do that every game. It's like you're focused every game, and from the beginning of the game to the end of the game. And, you know, what's it like when you're being taken out in the middle innings because you're not having a good game? What does that do to you? I always think to myself, what are they like in the clubhouse later on? You know, you can only imagine that, the frustration.
Yeah, but what a lot of players have talked to me about is the fact that, you know, sometimes it's what they have to have is short-term memory. You know, they can't think about what happened that particular game. They have to just move on and know that there's, you know, a total of 162 games in a given year.
Right, exactly. Which brings me to another question I just thought of. Were all of these 150, did they all have children of their own?
Some did not. You know, I remember Randy Wolf, you know, former pitcher with the Phillies. You know, he says that he doesn't want to get married or have kids until he leaves the game of baseball. And the reason why for Randy it was so important was he had lost his father when he was in high school.
Oh.
And there was a tremendous void for him, you know, because his father wasn't available for him and his brother Jim, who's also who happens to be a major league umpire.
Wow.
So in Randy's case, he says, I don't want to get married and have kids until I leave this game because I want to spend all my available time with them. So the answer is, you know, I think there's a lot of different situations. You know, some are not married. You know, the Evan Longorias of the world, I don't think Justin Verlander is married. But really, that really never came up in a lot of the situations, unless they brought it up.
Right.
You know, and they talk about their own son or their own daughter being the father.
Right. Did you ever get a sense that these players are sorry they can't spend more time with their children?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
That must be.
You know, when they, that's what they talk about a lot of times. It's the fact that, you know, that when they do have a chance to spend the time, it's all they do. You know, it's all they, meaning that when they do have that chance to happen to be home, you know, home for, you know, a long period of time for your, like, home series, and they do get to spend time with their family, they certainly relish that.
Right. It's got to be an incredibly wonderful feeling to come home and realize that you have the next, however, I guess they still have to keep in shape during the off season.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You can't just gorge and expect to go back and
for these guys anymore.
And that's another way that it's very difficult, because you have to keep in shape. You can't be sitting eating chicken wings every night for 7 hours or something.
I don't think, you know, but I guess John Kreck said it the best, former John Kreck, that, you know, you don't have to be an athlete to be a baseball player. So I don't know whether that holds it true anymore, but these guys really, there's some real great break time for them anytime here.
I'm amazed at the number of the 150 there. I mean, they talk about how dedicated their dad was to the game and how dedicated they are to the game. That total dedication and everything else is like, I mean, you can imagine they're playing baseball past dinner time sometimes because they're so focused to be, you know, I mean, I don't know if they realize that they're going to make the major league someday, but I guess that's the theory. You know, someday I'm going to be famous. But not really.
In most of the cases of the players that I talked to, interestingly enough, most of those players were never the best kid in the little league program, and never did they think in growing up that they would be in a situation where they would either be playing pro ball,
really,
or major league ball, or any kind of ball. For them, it was really just spending their time with their dad. You know, I guess James Shields, a great pitcher from the Tampa Bay Rays, summed it up nicely when he said, you know, it wasn't about wins, it wasn't about losses, it was about spending, you know, time with my dad at the local pizza shop after the game.
Wow, that's pretty powerful. And you realize that it isn't only baseball. There are, that spending the time with the dad is vital, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's just it. And you know, it seems to be a common and underlying theme of a lot of ball players that it's the most important person in their life is their dad, and that connection. You know, I was just at finished up a book signing at the National Baseball Hall of Fame here in Cooperstown. And, you know, it's amazing the number of just fathers and sons that all came to my presentation of the book signing. It was kind of neat to say. But, you know, again, that's what baseball is all about. Is that connection, that connecting to, you know, generations, and that's probably kind of these fathers are spending with their son.
Yeah.
And those are not the little guys, it's, you know, the big guys as well, father and their older son.
Now, you mentioned to me you saw Phil Niekro today. Who were some of the other big names that you saw there?
So Phil Niekro was here at the Hall of Fame, and Ozzie Smith, and Burt Blyleven, and Carlton Fisk, and Tony Perez, and Eddie Murray. And it was kind of neat listening to those guys, because they were all talking still about that connection they had with their dad and how they missed their dad in some of the cases, but that they're heroes in each of their cases was their father.
Now, when you did, I didn't ask you this before, but you did all these 150 interviews. Did you always record them, or do you?
Oh, absolutely.
So you could play them. All I can think of was there's no way he could remember all of this. Just no.
No, it was recording. It was recording different.
That's interesting, because then of course you have to go back later and write the book, write in the book. So, what was the hardest part about writing the book?
Really, that fear of not hoping that I didn't miss anything. And not getting a chance to get their story told. That was probably the toughest part. And really the administrative aspects of it. You know, just getting these stories and transcribing and putting them down and making readable stories.
Right. But you had been planning this for 5 years, so you had the time to really fine-tune everything, too.
Exactly. So that's true.
While you were doing your other job, too. doing it all at once.
But then again, the publisher only gave me about 6 to 9 months to do the next book. So I guess they figure that I'm getting that down, which is about the closer role, which is called Living on the Edge, Life of a Major League Closer. That's the next book out. And it really is, again, it's a collection of interviews that I'm doing right now. About 60 closers of past and present greats and current greats. And they really just talk about their very unique role, which is the closer role.
We didn't talk about Leigh Tobin. Now, what did she do as far as, was she helping you write the book, or?
Exactly. We called on Leigh because we have the, she's been with the Phillies for 20 years, and she knows how to give those stories that extra baseball punch behind them.
So you just added a little authentic, a little more.
Yeah, I think it did. In terms of, because I'm speaking from, the Disney vernacular. But we were able to incorporate Leigh in terms of, getting that baseball vernacular in there. But, the other thing to understand, too, is a lot of people say, is it a baseball book or is it a book about fathers and, relationships? I kind of think it's more about fathers and sons and relationships. But baseball serves as a beautiful backdrop.
Right. Absolutely. Now, is your plan for the future to write a baseball book a year?
That would be my goal. Yeah, that would be a wonderful goal. In terms of, just getting one out per year.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what you write about each time. I think that's fascinating. I mean, a different subject every year. And all that work, you're going to have to interview more Major League Baseball players.
Yes, I'm going to have to twist my arm and get back there again. Yes.
I think I envy you already, just thinking about how much.
Thank you, David.
How much fun that would be. Well, the book again is called Major League Dads. It's from Running Press. It's in all your bookstores. Is it available as an ebook too?
Not yet, but it is coming very soon. That's what our publishers are telling us.
Right.
But the great thing about it is it's available in all the brick and mortar locations and everywhere the normal locations that you would find a book online as well. So we just have very happy that. So far with the success of the book. And
now,
as I say with everyone, every interview that I do is, my goal is, as I said, it's been an emotional journey for these 5 years, and I hope everyone has a chance of picking this book up and having fun with it and really sharing it with someone they love, whether it's a father, son, grandfather, daughter, mother, sharing it, really enjoying it as much as I did in putting it together these 5 years.
Now, one last thing. On the back of the book, is that Terry Francona up at the top with his son? Or who is that?
Oh, no. That is actually one of our... He is the very last interview in the book. His name is Ben Zobrist. He is the all-purpose everything DH/outfielder/infielder for the Tampa Bay Rays. And that is, again, just one of those great images of kids, of these ball players that... We see enough of the pictures of their current looks. It is unique and wonderful to see some of these pictures from their own archives, their own family collections, and just seeing them in what they look like when they're little.
Right. Well, it's been great talking to you, Kevin. Best of luck with the book, and it's truly
David,
interesting.
Thank you.
The book, again, is Major League Dads from Running Press. You can go out and buy it in all your bookstores now. Thanks so much. This has been David's Book Talk. We'll talk to you next time.